Welcome back, everyone, to Constructive Uncoupling, the podcast devoted to amicable divorces. I'm Judy Weigel, your host and amicable divorce expert. Why? Because that's all I do, amicable divorces. And our guest today is also in the world of amicable divorces. Her name is Judy Graybill. How are you, Judy?
I'm fine. Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, it's really a pleasure because you do something that most people don't do, but something that is so absolutely needed. You're a step family coach. You work in the world of blended families, don't you?
Yes. Yes, I do.
When did it start? How long have you been doing this?
So I've been doing this over 11 years now. Actually, I guess it's closer to 12. And well, it started as most people with personal experience. Actually, it's interesting because I was actually raised semi in a step family because my parents got divorced and both my parents dated again. And my parents, that was my mom's second marriage. And she had kids from her previous marriage. So I actually had heard horror stories kind of from them, but they didn't understand step family dynamics. They didn't think that that was part of the issue. So then fast forward, you know, a couple decades when I'm in a relationship, we dated. He had kids. I don't have kids of my own, but he had kids from his previous marriage. And we dated a whole year before we moved in together. And then after we moved in together, just all the arguing and fighting and everything. So, and everything just really went downhill. And it's like what most step parents think they know what they're getting into. We all intellectually know. And I had my degree in psychology and sociology. So it's not like I didn't understand divorce. I didn't understand step family dynamics. And there's a psychology of step family dynamics. And after, we got a counselor, but it didn't work out. And she didn't know anything about step family dynamics. She didn't, so she wasn't able to help us. And so we ended up breaking up. And then after that, I found the Step Family Foundation, or it was around the same time we broke up. I found the Step Family Foundation, and just like the lights just started going off. You know, and I'm like, and then I started really understanding at a deeper level why we were having the level of issues that we had. Now, like in my personal situation, there's also some mental health issues going on with some of the people. My ex also had codependency, which I didn't really understand. I only at that point only really had book knowledge of. I didn't have any experience of it. So there's those type of things going on as well. And even with his ex, with substance issues and that kind of thing. So in my situation, it wasn't just step family dynamics. It was also a lot of other issues. But with the Step Family Foundation, I got certified and I started strictly on helping other families with step family dynamics. I really wanted to save them the frustrations that I went through. So because I learned so much and I had my own experiences, I just wanted to help people to be able to stay in the relationship and work through those dynamics instead of leaving. And what I realized is that even with my knowledge of psychology and understanding that step families exist, there's not a lot of knowledge or understanding about the dynamics of step families and what that really means to actually, and there's actually a lot of research. The Step Family Foundation has been around since the 70s, and there's actually now a lot of research. There's just not a lot of awareness of it.
Well, you know, you said something that I hadn't really even thought about, even though I work in the field of divorce myself, but I hadn't even thought about when you're looking at step families, you know, everything I assume is focused on adults relating to the children, but you brought up something just now that I think is equally important, and that is you have adults relating to adults as one dynamic. And then you have the adults relating to the children as another dynamic. So until, and I want you to speak to this, until the dynamic between the adults is worked out and is healthy, you can't possibly have the dynamics between the adults and the children be healthy. Is that a true statement?
Oh, 100%. And it's a very wise statement. You have no idea. And a lot of people don't actually get that. I mean, because we hear a lot, like the popular, in society saying is put your big panties on and, you know, big girl panties on and just work the higher thing for the kids. But a lot of times what they miss is how important that relationship is with your current partner, which is why when I'm coaching teamwork and working and really strengthening that partnership is so important as a coach. And they don't know how to do that because you have so many challenges coming at you. It's like, because you have those real challenges with the kids happening in real time, and your mind says that takes precedence. I really need to work on my issue. I'm not connecting with my stepkids. I really want to do that. So, you know, these personalities go into overdrive trying to make that work. And then the discipline comes up because the kids don't want to listen to you. And we can get into more of that too, because if they're not adjusted to, the kids may have not even adjusted to the divorce in the first place.
Oh, true.
So they may not even be wanting. I'm sorry.
I'm sorry to interrupt you. I'm so sorry, but that got me excited. Truer words have never been spoken, because when people come to my office and there are children involved, they're getting divorced, and one or both parents has a significant other already in the wings, all of a sudden I say, well, wait a minute. Have the kids met these significant others yet? And whether they have or have not, I mean, it's important how it evolves, how the meeting happens. But my next question is always, well, how are the kids doing adjusting to the divorce and secondarily adjusting to these new adults in their lives and then possibly other children that are being brought into their lives?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, the adjustment for the kids is so huge. And it's really, this is one of the things that makes it so difficult. And this is why the remarriages tend to fail more often than first marriages, is because remarriages, step families are founded on this loss. They're founded on the loss of dreams, the loss of the family, loss of the marriage, loss of the partnership, loss of love, that fear of failure. So you bring all those losses with you to the next relationship. And really, like, they're still in pain, you know, like in a first, and I just want to compare this for just a moment. Think about the first relationship, your first marriage. You're in bliss. You feel like you're going to conquer the world together. You know, it's like you're so much in bliss. It's just like that honeymoon phase is real. The honeymoon phase can last a whole year. It might last 2 years, you know, if you're really lucky. But you have that honeymoon phase. And in contrast, your step families are founded out of the loss. It's founded, the divorce comes first. You know what I mean?
Right.
So it's like you're trying to fill that void. And there's this drive. It's like getting back that high. We all want that bliss that we had in the first relationship. Exactly. And I mean, like, I'm not going to lie. Of course I want that. Everybody wants that.
I want that on a daily basis. Even if I don't have a relationship, I want
that. I know.
That feels good.
We get lost in our own emotions and we're trying to fill that void. So it's really sometimes even more difficult to even recognize the signs that our kids are showing. And those signs, and kids will often give signs, but they just get missed. And or maybe they're not giving signs, you know, maybe the kids look like they're really adjusting well. And that's actually a really common, it's a big myth that parents think their kids are adjusting really well, when in actuality, the kids often aren't.
How should parents check in with their kids if they see things are kind of okay, nobody's being disruptive on the outside? How do they check in to make sure?
Yeah, you really have to have that conversation with the kids. It's not, when I say the conversation, it's not one conversation. It is just ongoing communication. You really just have to have an open door policy with your kids, and really just, it has to be an ongoing thing. It's not a one and done. And you just, and the thing is, you, if you're aware that of those dynamics, then you're going to go out of your way and be proactive with having an ongoing conversation, or at least an open door policy. I think that, so it's not like there's a specific thing, you know.
No. I check in, and every now and then check in, I guess, just to make sure everything is working okay.
And the other thing I would say is, like, time. You have to, you know, just err on the side of caution with regard to time. Take it slow. In your mind, you have to take it slow, because you mentioned something really important when you were talking about when you're mediating and the people who are getting divorced already have significant others, and you ask only, have the kids even met the new partner yet? So this is a really important thing that I want to touch on, and I actually had it in my notes to talk about, because this is so important, is what when. So the popular narrative is to not introduce your significant other to the kids until or unless it's serious, because parents don't want their kids to get attached to somebody that's not going to work. They don't want to give the impression that love is fleeting, and they don't want to give the impression that they have, you know, a revolving door of partners. So it makes sense to not introduce the partner right away. However, even though that makes sense and it's a wise thing to do, what comes with that is that the parents are already in love with their partner by the time, and they're already wanting and feeling that commitment and wanting that commitment by the time the kids meet the partner. Like, I don't want to introduce my kids to them until I know that there's something here. So, but the parents are like on day maybe 180, or like maybe it's 300 or something, however long the relationship's going, they're already in love. Well, the kids are on day one. You're just now introducing them. And so that's when the kids start processing. And I think it's really important for parents to be really 100% cognizant, like on a feeling level. Like, I mean, I this is something that I can't overstate, in my opinion, because it's so important. And people get it intellectually, but they often don't really get how much processing the kids have to go through. So on day one of when the kids meet the new partner, they may or may not understand that this is serious between their parents.
Okay, so this makes perfect sense. Interesting. So in a lot of our agreements, it's not law. It just has been organically brought forward by parents over the past few years to write into the settlement agreement that significant others will not be introduced to the children at least for 6 months or a year. Just depends on what the time frame is. Okay, right. So that's great. Everybody intellectually understands that. But your point is something I had not thought about yet. And that is, well, if you're already in love and you're in that wonderful, blissful honeymoon stage, although not married yet, but still in the honeymoon stage, now you've decided the time is right to introduce your children or child to that person. And you have to pull back and take it slow. Maybe when you introduce your child, your significant other isn't staying overnight in the house that your child is staying in that night. Maybe it's we go out to dinner and introduce, and then significant other goes home. Something like that, to put it in tangible context.
Yes, and you have to do that for a while. And that's part of what makes it difficult, because it's like sometimes parents don't want to. I mean, you want to run with your emotions again. You know, it's like you're, it's really hard to temper those two things. But you really have to understand that, the kids, like you mentioned, all the changes that the kids are adjusting to, they might still be adjusting to the divorce. They might still be adjusting to not having their other parent around as often. They still might be, they may have changed neighborhoods. They may have changed schools. They, you know, the whole moving back and forth between households is exhausting for the kids, because they have different rules in each household, and they also a lot of them have fantasies that their parents are going to get back together, and this is big. So, I mean, I could go on. I actually I have made notes. I put it in my notes too, the horror stories that some kids may have heard of step families, the wicked stepmother and all of her fairy tales. But then if they have friends who have already had step parents, that may or may not have gone well. So then they have, so.
God, hopefully not. I know what you mean. Hopefully not. That's when you have to pull out reruns of the Brady Bunch. And you have to show what the ultimate step family, blended family, can look like. Okay, yeah. So there's so many different parts to this. There's the part where the adults all have to go through their relationships. The two biological parents have to get along post-divorce. The biological parents and their new significant others have to present a united front. And then everybody has to understand the dynamics of the children. But the one thing we haven't hit upon is, what if there are children of two relationships that get together and the children don't get along?
Yeah. Although that's a possibility, more often than not, the children do get along. I mean, there's personality clashes, but the research shows that that's less of an issue. That's okay, usually not the main issue.
Okay, so
there is some adjustments there. For example, if there's sometimes the older, like, you know, we all have a different roles in our families. Like if you're the firstborn, you know, you might have more responsibilities. If you're the youngest, you might get more spoiled. So then if you have siblings, you might not be the older child anymore, or you might not be the younger child anymore, or, you know, it could be the middle child that, you know, whatever those dynamics are, those change at times. And so then that can also add another level of adjustment. The research shows that it's typically not too bad compared to, you know, the stepchild, stepparent relationship is probably the most challenging. I want to add a positive too with regard to the siblings. What the research also shows as a positive, that if they get step siblings that are the same age, sometimes that could be a really good thing, because now they have like a new friend. I mean, because it doesn't feel like a brother sister or sister sister. It feels like a really close friend. And so among all these other negatives, I like to add some of the positives once in a while, you know.
Right. And I was just thinking, so the youngest child in one family may not end up being the youngest child in a blended family. Right. So pecking order kind of changes a little bit, which I know is not a big deal, but I was just thinking about that. So you get a call. Let's look at how you work, how you approach dealing with blended families, step parents, etc. So you get a call from an adult who says, "I think we need help combining our families." What do you do? How does this work out?
Okay, so most often it's the step parent because they're having the biggest challenges, and most often they're already in a relationship. Not to say that I don't get people who call me who have not yet combined a household, but typically those don't end go into a full blown coaching scenario because I basically just lay out it's usually one session because I just lay out the steps of all the things they need to work on now before they get into a relationship or before they move in together. But typically the phone calls that come to me, they're already living together, and I get a mix. I get a lot of people who are near breaking up by the time that they call me. On a smaller degree, I get people who call me at the first sign of going through the challenges. That is more ideal than waiting until you're about to break up, because it's a lot harder. Yeah, as I'm sure you know, it's a lot harder to reverse all of those things.
Right.
So there's two main challenges with regard to the step families. It's one is what I call the power differential, and the second is the insider-outsider scenario. So like with the power differential, so step parents only have the amount of power that the biological parent gives them. And it's usually not conscious. I mean, because they're not thinking in terms of power, okay? Although the step-parent often does feel powerless, they don't understand.
At least initially, until I guess you get your bearings and start connecting with the kids.
Right. And so when they're not connecting with the kids, they don't often understand all the underlying reasons why. So, and this is very tied into the insider-outsider scenario. So, I mean, I mentioned that step families are founded on loss. So the other biggest step family dynamic, psychology, is this lack of a biological bond and this lack of a shared history. So the step parents actually, and I mentioned the time, you know, so the kids might not be ready for another parent yet. They might not be ready to accept direction from somebody other than their parent. So when the parent and the step parent are disagreeing about what is proper discipline or what are rules, should the kid clean up his room or should I allow him, free expression? You know, I hear all kinds of things, you know, and it could be as simple as like if they're together and they're arguing, it sends a signal that to the stepkids or to the kids that they don't have to listen to the step parent. Because if my dad or my mom is arguing, if they disagree with stepmom, then obviously stepmom doesn't know what she's talking about.
I can see that. Yeah, good point.
So then what happens is even when the biological parent is not there, the stepkids then still don't listen.
Right.
And regardless of what the step-parent says, the kids are like, "I don't have to listen to you." And they may or may not say that, but like, you know, "You're not my parent, I don't have to listen to you" is a real thing, even if they don't say that. So what happens oftentimes is that as soon as the biological parent gets home, the kids are running up to them. "Oh my gosh, I can't believe what Mary did to me." Because they often don't use mom. They most often that if they're using the term mom, they pretty much already accepted them as such, unless they're forced to use that title. Usually it's a name. So I just pulled Mary out of my hat. So, but usually they're running up to dad, say, dad, I can't believe, you're not going to believe what Mary did to me. It's like, she wouldn't let me have dessert unless I finished dinner. But the kids is just going to say, she wouldn't let me have dessert. She wouldn't let me have dessert. And they're so mad. And then, you know, and, you know, dad's is like, why on earth would she not let allow my kid to be have dessert? I mean, that's so mean. So he's thinking she's being mean. And how he handles that makes a big difference. If he's just going to go off the handle on her, and especially if he does it in front of the kids that sends a direct message, I can get my way. Dad's always going to fight for me. So, but if he talks to Mary reasonably and ask Mary like what happened, and Mary says, well, it's because they didn't finish their dinner first. I'm like, I want them to have this balanced nutritional meal, and they didn't. They had three bites of what I made, and then they wanted dessert. So, and to her, that's very reasonable. So, but what often happens is they're not having those type of conversations. So if they're coming to me for coaching, it's because that communication is breaking down. The father is going off the handle.
Okay, or well, maybe let me reinterpret this. So if dad's the biological parent, Mary is the stepmom, is it a natural reaction for dad to defend his kids without even thinking? Natural reaction.
Yes, right? Yes.
And so you, as a step family coach, will show them things like that, that this might be your natural reaction, but you're in a situation right now where you have to think things through almost ahead of time and plan what your conversation will be like when the kids challenge us, because they do anyway. They challenge the regular parents. You know, so they're going to challenge their step parents as well. I think that's a really good point, because on a good day, even if we're not divorced and we have slightly different parenting styles, or one parent is emotionally overspent, they just came home from work, they're not in a problem-solving frame of mind, oh, let's just resolve it, give her dessert, let's move past this. You know, it's easy to go there, right?
Yes.
When you're in a step family, what I'm understanding for you is things really have to be thought out even a little more than if you're in your biological family.
Yes. So you mentioned being proactive and thinking ahead, and that's and that is a lot of what I help them with. So I have basically two main approaches. And if they're in really high conflict and arguing like intensely almost every day, then I recommend my 6-week program, which is Jumpstart to Harmony. And that is really just working through all those major arguments. And then I also have a 3-month program, which is more long-term. So let me express my two main approaches. So one is helping them establish rules and consequences. And the second approach is the family mission statement. So with rules and consequences, they come up with the rules together and the consequences. But there's a lot of pitfalls here. So like I don't want to go off into too many tangents, because there's a lot of sub-challenges with regards to each one of these things that I mentioned. But basically, the idea with the rules and consequences, the way it works ideally is for the biological parent and the step-parent to come up with the rules together on and agree on them. And the biological parent has to have full buy-in. Yes, I want these rules. These rules make sense. These are going to help my kids be a better adult, or to be more responsible, or whatever it is that they want for their kids. And then they have to come up with consequences ahead of time. Like, what happens if the kids break these rules? So the parent mentions what the knows ahead of time what are the consequences. And they have to explain, they have to have a sit-down conversation with the kids to explain the rules, why he or she wants those rules for their kids, why they believe personally that those rules are good. And then if you break these rules, these are the consequences. So the biological parent has full buy-in. They tell the kids. So it's all out in the open, exactly what is expected. They're telling the kids what is expected of you and what happens if you don't. And at the same time, he is giving the step parent permission to give out these consequences. So he's making it clear to the kids and he's making it clear to the step parent. So then even when the step parent is not, or even when the biological parent is not there, the step parent says, oh, you broke X rule. This is the consequence. So that's how they work together. That's, of course, the ideal situation. There's
that sounds absolutely great, as a matter of fact, because A, the kids have come presumably from a divorced situation where their parents generally didn't get along, which is why they're no longer married. So they're used to seeing two adults that don't get along.
Right.
And now they're into another situation where one familiar adult, one unfamiliar adult is in front of them. And it appears then from what you're saying, it's absolutely so important that the step parent and the biological parent really sort this out before presenting themselves as a couple to the kids, and maybe a check-in too, because you have an opportunity to provide a new model for your children in a blended yes. family, right?
Yes, absolutely. And actually, the good news is that research also shows that if the second marriage is more successful, if by chance, like I can work successfully with the couple, or they figure it out on their own, that's fine. Some actually do figure it out on their own. That is true. If they work through all those issues and the kids see that healthy relationship model to them, it's actually a really positive effect on the kids. And if you look around, there are a lot of kids who actually just adore their step parents. And I still get excited about those, obviously, you know, because it's not always the case. But there are a lot of them. So the research shows that actually is even better, because they learn problem-solving skills and they actually go on to have more rewarding relationships. They have more healthy relationships. They tend to get better. They have better success in school, better grades. I mean, there's all kinds of other benefits.
I know. I've talked to friends and colleagues who are children of divorce. They said that they loved their step-parents. Oh, how refreshing.
Yes.
You know, this just happened to be a better parent. Not that I don't love my biological parent, but they do recognize, even in the face of loving their biological parent, they can tell you whether this is a good or bad parent or not in terms of their parenting skills.
Yes. So I do talk sometimes about what are the red flags. And so the challenge with those type of scenarios for, not for them, but for the step families who are not having a rewarding experience, if they're talking to somebody who has, the somebody who has had, who adores their step parent is not going to really get what the challenges are. So there's a lot of shaming that goes on, unfortunately, in stepmom groups. And the stepmoms or stepdads who have had negative experiences are often shamed by the other ones and are told that they're doing it wrong. And that's when we hear that saying, you just got to put on your big girl panties and you just got to do it and you just got to work harder, and or you got to pray to God, or you know, your faith is not strong enough. I don't know what I don't, you know, it's just it's
of course, if they bought a puppy, maybe if they got a puppy for the kids, everything would be resolved.
Right.
You know, puppies tend to heal every situation. Well, okay, so you brought up a good point. Well, have you come into situations, Judy, where the kids with all the best intentions of step parent, dad or mom, doesn't matter, they're just not getting along. Have you ever run into that, or do you feel
absolutely.
Okay.
And I would have to say that the vast majority of clients who come to me, I mean, like the step parents and the biological parents all have good intentions. Exes, not always, but that's another story. And we can talk about the co-parenting issue and just co-parenting with the ex. We can, that's a different discussion for the moment.
Okay.
Because even with co-parenting with an ex that does not have the best of intentions, if the bio and step-parent together, the main team, do have a strong partnership, then they're still going to have a success. They can still have a happy, thriving step family in spite of those challenges. So everybody usually has good intentions. So one of the things that happens is one of the scenarios, for example, is the different styles of parenting. So like if the biological parent has permissive parenting style, and the step-parent has an authoritarian parenting style, this is one of the big scenarios where it falls apart. Because like one of the pitfalls with the rules and consequences that I mentioned is there's a lot of parents who have never given their kids rules. Or they don't want, and permissive parents typically don't. They don't like rules. They don't like giving punishments. If they don't fully buy into the rules, sometimes they're only choosing rules to make their partner happy. You can't, if you do that, then the kids complain about it. I mean, the kids are going to recognize, like I mentioned, you have it all out in the open, why you're choosing those rules. But the thing is, if you're choosing a rule only to make your partner happy, your kids recognize that immediately. You're not going to be able to convince your kids that that's what you want. So the minute the consequence is given, they're going to complain. The permissive parent is like, okay, I won't make you do that. I'm sorry, or I'll make it up to you. I'll go buy you a candy bar. Or whatever. I mean, and then the step parent is like, okay, you just rewarded your son for the bad behavior. Go ahead.
I said I'll break more rules in your defense. family mission.
Yeah. So I just wanted to throw in another pitfall with regard to the rules and consequences. If the kids have a really close relationship with the other biological parent in the other household, the biological parent in the other household, the ex, has not healed their wounds and they're resistant to having somebody else raise their kids. I mean, motherhood's a very sacred thing. It's like, I am the only mother. No one else is going to be your mother. And how dare somebody step in, like, and is going to be resentful. Even so, the step parent, like Mary, might be really happy. I'm going to bond with my stepchild and I'm going to take her out to get her hair done. Biological, I know, right? Biological mom is like, oh no, nobody gets my daughter's haircut except me.
Right.
And it's a really benign thing. It was very good intention, like you mentioned. It's just, it falls down. And so the step parent has to find interests that the biological parent doesn't have. So
okay,
they have to like,
so hold on this. So what should these two, let's just take mothers, because of course mothers, you know, motherhood is sacred in one respect, fatherhood is sacred in another respect. So
yes,
let's stick with the moms. So there are certain things moms do with their children, especially their daughters, but their children. So should stepmom sit down with biological mom and really talk about those things that biological mom would prefer keeping just between her and her children? Would you say?
Oh, that would be wonderful. And it's some do get to that point, but they have to typically go through a lot of challenges before they get there. Because if the biological mom is resistant and she's just mad. She's not proactive. She resents everything. She is not going to be proactively saying, hey, let's talk and, you know, work things out. Typically, she doesn't want to be friends with the stepmom. She doesn't want anything to do with the stepmom. And a lot of times what happens is the biological mom is talking bad about the stepmom to the kids. So she wants nothing to do with the stepmom. And so the stepmom doesn't know. She simply does not know ahead of time what the biological mom is going to want to do or not want to do. And she typically only finds out after it happens and the biological mom just, you know, goes bananas. Okay.
So what should stepmom do if she's in a situation where biological mom really doesn't want to have anything to do with her? What does stepmom do in that case?
So this is the most challenging. She really needs to, what I was about to say is you have to kind of second guess in a way the kinds of things that and you have to like look at behaviors. What kinds of things does a biological mom do with the child? What kind of things have they done in the past? So you can choose something different because you really want to find something that your stepkids are going to enjoy doing that only you and your stepkids are going to do that will create a bonding experience that like the biological mom doesn't want to do. Like one of my clients, for example, trying to remember, it was like scrapbooking or something of that nature. I can't remember exactly what it was. It was like a creative thing that the child just like one day had an interest in and the biological mom didn't. So the stepmom was able to say, oh yeah, I'll do that with you. And they created an experience together. So it's like you really have to find something like that that is unique to you and your stepchild that the other biological parent is not going to care about.
And for stepmom, biological mom just simply has to work things out in her own time. Same with dad. You have to work things out in your own time.
Yes.
And nobody knows what that is. But on the step parent side, do you think, Judy, it would be helpful at all if it's rocky with the biological parent, do you think it appropriate for step-parent to say, look, I'm here. I exist. I'm part of this new relationship. I need guidance from you. I need something from you because there are going to be activities. There are going to be real life things that are going to come up, going to the pumpkin patch and, you know, Halloween and Thanksgiving. We do have to have something. I need some guidance from you or at least less resistance when
right.
I try
so most
to
often
live.
The biological mom has some there's a so in these type of scenarios that I'm laying out, I mean, there are exceptions, obviously, and what you're saying is obviously ideal. But the reason it doesn't work is because there are cases where that does work. I just want to say that. But like when I'm talking about these challenging situations, because this is actually a huge conversation in the stepmom groups, that really the biological mom wants nothing at all to do with it, would not even be open. So there are a lot of stepmoms that try that and attempt that and extend an olive branch. And the biological mom is like, no. Like, I mean, and some stepmoms are just like, I can't even try to be friends with this woman who is talking shit about me can I say that?
Yes, you can.
But saying a lot of bad things to me to the kids.
Yeah.
So, and some biological moms are actually telling their kids, I mean, like in the worst case scenarios, they're saying to the kids, Mary is a bad person. You don't have to listen to her. You shouldn't have to listen to her. I can't believe she is doing this. And she's like, you know, or just say all kinds of bad things. And you know, if you like her, then you can't
like me too.
Yeah, something like that.
You're being disloyal to me.
It's you're betraying me if you like her. And the kid, that betrayal, that loyalty bond is really strong. And even if the biological mom is not using those words, that's how the kids feel. They often feel like if I like my stepmom too much, then I'm going to somehow lose my mom, or she's going to love me less, or you know, they don't understand. So the biological dad really has a lot more influence here than what he realizes. Oftentimes he thinks that this is just between the women, but in actuality, he's had a relationship with the ex for a really long time. And if the biological dad could actually really work on better co-parenting, then he can actually bridge that gap for the stepmom. And a lot of people don't realize this. So this is one thing that I work with. So he has to really work on being less combative with the ex if he can heal that. But one of the reasons he doesn't oftentimes is because he's also fearful that the biological mom is going to take away custody rights or threaten to take away. I mean, just the threat alone. I mean, like they might not be able to legally do it, but like it's that threat, you know what I mean? And if she threatens, she's going to take us to court. It's going to be a lot of money. It's going to be a lot of, you know, it's an emotional thing. So that threat alone scares them. And they're like, she's just going to make it harder. So that fear of whatever that retaliation is going to be often is a big thing. I mean, I had a client couple, for example, who refused to have any contact with his ex at all. He's like, I tried so many times. She twists everything I say. It's just all these threats. He's like, so he was really in this position where he's like, I can't talk to her anymore. Like, so instead of working on changing that, because it was just like, you know, there's no wiggle room there. He was like, no, I tried. I'm done. All communication is in text messages or letters, and I send it through my daughter. And I know intellectually, you know, us professionals, we don't feel like that's a good idea. But
no,
go ahead.
I think texts are horrible for important conversations.
Yeah.
When I find out my clients are texting, but Judy, I texted her. Okay, and where did that get you? The human voice is so much more important than you know, and the context that it provides cannot possibly be given in a text. But here's what I was going to ask you. So let's just say we do have an untenable situation, and not throwing biological mom under the bus. This is merely an example. So biological mom is having a very difficult time accepting stepmom. And biological dad is having a very difficult time communicating with biological mom. So in that type of a situation, could biological dad and stepmom sit the kids down and just simply say, biological mom is having a very difficult time adjusting to this new situation, and we all have to be understanding of her.
Yes.
So coming from biological dad and stepmom, are they taking the fear of disloyalty out of the equation by saying we simply have to be understanding of mom?
Okay. Yes. If they get to that point, that is huge. But they have to go through a lot of, they have to start reprogramming because they have all those gremlins in their mind telling them that it's not going to work out. They have all these things in their mind of like, what if the kids do this? What if she does this? What if they have all these what ifs? And I can't name them all on the top of my head, but there are a lot of them. So they have to really work through those emotions and they have to really work through those fears that are coming up for them. And if they can do that, and that is, so like when I do counseling, or I mean coaching, because I don't do counseling, it's coaching. But when I work with clients, I also work with them on an individual basis. I meet with the couple together, but then I also meet with them individually. And so when I meet with them on a one-on-one, we work through a lot of those fears. And also working with them one-on-one allows them to actually talk about things that they're afraid to say in front of their partner with regard to fears or this or that, because they don't want to trigger any other new fears or concerns in their partner. So the one-on-ones allow us to talk about those openly. But yes, if they work through those issues and they get to the point of being understanding and explaining to the kids in a way that is not throwing the mom under the bus, that is huge. So yes.
Okay. And I just, that is such a great piece of advice. And I want to conclude, Judy, with something you said that I think is so important. And some people may say, oh gosh, that isn't for me. But I have a feeling it is for the kids. And that is the family mission statement.
Oh yes, I'm so glad you brought that up. I love working on the family mission statement with the families, because this really works well for the permissive parent. As I was saying, permissive parents don't really like those rules. They're harsh. They often back out on the rules. They back out on the consequences. They don't like giving punishments. And the family mission statement is value-based. And the kids can contribute to that family mission statement on, this is how we want to be as a family. These are the values that are important to us as a family. So the kids actually get full buy-in of how we want to be as a family. So it's more of a guidance. And when you get full buy-in from every single person, it's not about consequences. It's not about punishment. It's just about striving to do better on a regular basis. And then with the family, it's a lot of work to get there though, because sometimes there's to get the parents, the bio and the step to reframe their mind from the rules and consequences to a mission statement is sometimes a journey. You know, so we have to work through that, because if they treat the mission statement like rules and consequences and want to punish the kids if they're not living up to the family mission statement, it kind of falls apart. But if you just work at it as like the ideal way of doing it is having ongoing family table discussions. And by a family table discussion, it's like everybody's involved. And this is just the single household. This is not the second household. This is just the primary household, bio, step, and kids together talking about, this is how we as a family want to be. And then in that family table discussion, and this is after they've developed the family mission statement, this is a 3-month program. So I really work with them a long time. So I work with the couple together to get them on the same page before we actually bring in the step kids. Because as I mentioned, first and foremost, they need a teamwork and they need to be a strong partnership. So we need to secure that first before we actually bring in the step kids. So that's why this is my 3-month program. And sometimes it goes a little bit beyond that just to work through all the things that come up. But when you get to that point of involving the kids and you get to those family table discussions, then it's basically each person saying what went well this week and what do we need to improve upon. And so if you're really... if that's the way you're framing your thoughts and your mindset and the way you approach things, then you're really, you're going to make a lot of progress. You know,
So this sounds great. And lastly, once the family mission statement is created and we have the follow-up family meetings, the little check-ins, how is this going? How can we improve? So the Pollyanna coming out in me is asking you this last question. Have you ever experienced bringing in bio mom and dad into the step family mission statement and just extending the net? Because honestly, and this is what we all say in divorce, the marriage may be ending, but the family's not.
Right. So yeah, I do know of families that do that and have done that. I haven't with my clients particularly, just because that's not how the clients that showed up got to. But I do know of families that do that. I have had a client couple who I worked with them individually on how to have conversations with the ex. So even though I always extend the invitation to have the ex join us, so far I haven't had any takers. But I have had clients where I work with my clients on how to have those conversations to co-parent better with the ex. And then they go and have those conversations with the ex. And then we come back and we talk about how it went and go from there. So that's as far as I've gotten. But so that is happening and it is possible.
It is possible. But I'm sure it's very rare because it takes everybody a while just to get to their safe space, so to speak, where they're comfortable with their new life and the new arrangement. And that's just so very difficult. I get it.
You speak a mouthful. I mean, just getting to the safe space is a huge journey in and of itself.
Yeah. So I think the takeaways here are to have the best blended step family possible, the two new adults have to be on the same page about their direction with parenting. And then you bring the children in and you create a unified front. And lastly, if there's friction from one of the biological parents, you allow it to be okay and understanding. And if those are, I think this sounds like these are your three big takeaways.
Yes. Yay. That is great.
Did I pass the course? I hope I did.
Okay, so I think you came in with high grades. I mean, you had a lot of wisdom coming into this.
I love being teacher's pet. So Judy, and I never met a Judy I didn't like. So Judy, my other Judy counterpoint, tell people where you are and how they can reach you because you gave some phenomenal information.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that. So yeah, my website is judygraybill.com, JudyGrayBill.com. And I'm mostly on Instagram nowadays at judy.m.graybill. I am on Facebook at Judy Graybill. My professional page is Judy M. Graybill. I can't remember. My personal Anyways, one's Judy Graybill, one's Judy M. Graybill on Facebook. I'm also on Step Family Coach on Facebook. And I'm also on LinkedIn at Judy Graybill.
And Judy's in Phoenix. I just thought I'd let everybody know, but you don't have to be in Phoenix to work with you.
I've even worked with people in other countries. So I do love Zoom.
This is excellent, don't we all know? I wish I'd bought stock in it in the middle of March. Thank you, Judy, for your time. This was great, and I hope to be able to visit you again for more information. We only scratched the surface.
Right. I know. I had so many. I could go so many places. Thank you so much. This is a wonderful conversation, and I really hope that your listeners got some good takeaways. And yeah, you're excellent.
No question, they got great takeaways. And I also want to thank all of you for listening to Constructive Uncoupling, the podcast devoted to amicable divorces. You can reach me at Judy, J-U-D-Y, at constructiveuncoupling.com or through my website, divorceresourceinc.com. Thank you all very much, and I look forward to next week's episode.